Okay. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Hello, testing. It's weird. It's delayed. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do it.
We are back yet again. What is this? Episode 31? Maybe 32? Something like that?
Episode 32, I think. Yeah.
32. We have an interesting topic and an interesting group of dudes joining us on this one, don't we?
Yep. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm intrigued. We don't actually know what we're talking about, really.
No, we have no idea.
We know the general topic and the general idea, but the actual details, we have no idea.
What are we doing?
Should we just tell him?
No, but I mean, do we know what we're going to be talking about? Well, we could.
Kind of.
We'll explain it later.
We'll get into it. But
so, let's start with, that sounds better.
Yeah, it does.
Let's start with, your update.
My update?
You haven't done shit, have you?
Nothing. No. Nope,
I figured that.
Nothing.
Neither
same
have
old,
I.
Same old.
Neither have
really?
I.
What'd you do over the weekend?
It rained.
Only one day, though.
What?
Yeah.
Are you really serious?
Yeah, just
it rained nonstop.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you do?
It started raining Saturday at about 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it stopped Monday at about 8 in the morning. This morning, Monday morning when I woke up, I just literally I could see the sun coming into the bedroom, and I was like, "Look, it's a perfect day. Damn it." And Susie's like, "Well, of course, it's Monday."
Yeah, back to work.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like, every weekend, the weather has just sucked.
Why?
I don't get it. Why?
I don't know.
This is the worst Florida winter we've ever lived. It's just, if it's not cold, it's raining. And if it's not, it's like raining on the weekends, for sure.
It could be so much worse, but I feel like we're getting ripped off. Like, we live in Florida. It's supposed to be nice.
Well, I can deal with the cold. It's fine, because it's not that cold. But
right.
It's the rain.
Right.
What do you do with the rain?
Just waste.
Yeah.
We had a nice little weekend planned, and it got absolutely ruined by the weather. So,
what was your plan?
Livy and I were going to go up to St. Augustine and go spend the day up
there. I thought this is weekend.
Huh?
That's this weekend.
No, can't.
Why?
She goes home Saturday.
No, we discussed this. You're taking Friday off, and you're going Friday.
Depends on the weather at this point.
Well,
I don't know, but we were going to go Saturday, and it was crappy, so we didn't really do much on Saturday.
You said Saturday was great. See?
I wouldn't know. It didn't leave. I just assumed. Never left the house, but
yeah. When's the last time you flew a helicopter?
Friday? Yeah, Friday.
Oh, actually, you did. Yeah.
What about you?
I flew, when did I fly? I flew Saturday morning? Saturday?
I knew you were going to say that.
I busted a couple flights in the backyard. Whatever. You never believe me when I say that.
Let me guess. You flew Nitro, too.
I flew my Nitro. That's what I like to fly. What is wrong with you? That's what I like to fly when I fly in the backyard.
What are you talking
about? I woke up early Saturday. We thought the weather was going to suck. And we want to go ride our bikes. So we woke up early Saturday,
mm-hmm.
7 o'clock, which is early for a Saturday.
Sure.
And we were out of here by 8:30. We went all the way to the town of Leesburg, which is not too far, 30, 40 minutes with our bikes. We had breakfast at Cracker Barrel. Had a big freaking steak and eggs and
there
all kinds of stuff.
Nice.
And we're back by 11:30. So I went out to the backyard and busted 3 flights back to back on my Nitro. Mm-hmm. Are you listening there, Mr. Frank Moradios? I flew my Nitro.
Yeah.
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 Anyway.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I haven't really been doing much flying.
Mm-hmm.
I can't fly with you anymore because you're busy. Because you're busy for the next, you're out of commission for 2 weeks.
What are you talking about?
And,
whatever.
And the weather's been sucking.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Anyway.
So,
the coat race, man. People actually did it. People
finally
did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we gave them a little bit of a guilt trip, and suddenly they start using it. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
That's all it took. That was awesome. And they did it pretty quick. It took like 24 hours. Done.
Yeah. I'm impressed. But we have more for you guys this episode. Not going to say when it's going to happen, but you'll know it when it does. So
when?
When we share the codes.
What's wrong with your microphone?
What are we talking about?
Too far away.
Okay, sorry.
What else you got? What do you think of last week's interview?
It was cool. Yeah, that those blades are awesome. I can't wait to get a set and do some night flying with them.
Yeah.
Are you going to use them?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the idea. It's cool. I think it'll match well with like a Dalcon, so you can do some really cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. I think it's just cool that the people that have always wanted a night fly, a little machine, will be able to now.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a way to get night blades for something that small, right?
People are making their own, but I think it's pretty cumbersome.
Yeah, I mean,
challenge,
it's,
but this is
simple. You just buy it and
stick it on.
Spend an hour and you're done.
Right? Yeah, and you connect it to your phone and program it and done.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
That'd be cool. You and I can night fly fireballs then.
Yep, I agree.
And pretty sweet. Yeah,
Ross is a super nice guy. I wish him the best of luck with this project.
Yeah.
That should... I can't wait. I'm kind of excited about it because I think it's going to open up the... It just opens up the possibilities for night flying.
Right.
From every aspect. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to find night blades. We don't even stock that many.
No, very limited numbers.
And I think most manufacturers don't even produce that many.
Well, and the ones we stock are only for 700. So if you have like a T-Rex 600 you want to night fly, well, oh well. Good luck.
Find something else. Yeah, exactly.
But
good luck with that. Like, or 550.
Yeah.
That's a classic example, right?
Yep.
570.
Yeah, it's tough.
525. Yep. Like, even a Goblin 500, a T-Rex 500, which is 425.
Mm-hmm.
Like, any of those.
Yeah.
Like, it's a no-brainer now.
Yeah.
It's easy.
And if you guys want to support the project, it is officially live on Kickstarter. So if you just go on Kickstarter.
Is it?
Yeah.
Did you confirm?
Yeah.
Nice.
So if you go on Kickstarter and search for Night Wave Systems, you'll find it. They're off to a pretty good start. But see if we can get it going.
What else you got going?
Not much. Oh, the Torches Spring Bash dates were confirmed. Looking at the weekend of the April 6th. And we're going to do, everyone's allowed for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but we're really marketing it towards a one-day event on Saturday.
So officially it's a one-day event Saturday.
Correct.
But people are welcome to arrive early.
Yep.
The main difference is if you get there on Friday, you don't have to pay.
Yeah,
basically. You pay Saturday morning.
Yeah, but so we're looking at a one-day event. It's going to be fun. Gator and myself, and with the help of Mr. Camera here, we're putting on the event.
It's the best way to do it, the one-day deal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the people that go to this event are people, I mean, some people from Georgia or whatever, but most people are from Florida.
Pretty local, yeah.
So, and a lot of them just make the trip, round trip, so, makes sense.
What's funny is Rob Bingham from the UK is actually going to be here.
I know, I saw that on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be here for the event, so.
That's very cool.
Bad at all. It's going to be fun. So, April 6th, put it down on your calendar if you're in the area or if you want to come down for a little weekend getaway.
Yeah.
To sunny Orlando.
Absolutely. If you want to see Gator... The one and only Crash.
Yes.
Show up. Absolutely. We love you, Gator.
Poor guy.
Why poor? He just bought a new helicopter. Hasn't even flown it yet. He's not poor. He's got dough.
I feel bad for him.
Why? Because he crashes too much?
No, because we give him too much crap for it.
I think he gets a kick out of it, though. I think he loves it. It's all good. If we didn't do that, we wouldn't have as much fun.
True.
Anyway, so who are we bringing on today?
We are bringing on two people. Two people.
Two. I was told two.
Two. Yeah. So we're
Urcha.
Bringing on the
Urcha.
Urcha board.
Yeah.
Two of the Urcha board. I guess there's five people, but we're going to be graced with the presence of two people.
And do you know what Urcha stands for?
International Radio Controlled Helicopter Association.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. So we're going to learn a little bit about Urcha, the past, the present, and the future. I guess they have some news for the 2019 Jamboree.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Awesome. Pretty cool. All right. Let's give them a call.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we have two very special guests via Skype, joining us today via Skype. The first one is Mr. Tim DePerry. He's the Vice President of Urcha, mostly in charge of development. How are you doing, Tim?
Good, Bert. Thank you so much for having us on today. We really appreciate that.
Thank you for joining us. We also have Wes Minaire. God, I have a problem with your last name, dude. This is the second go-around.
It's all good. At least it's not Mordieus or something.
No, I know. That would be a little harder. And Wes is the secretary of Urcha. How you doing, Wes? Thanks for joining
us. I'm doing great. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So we're looking forward to Urcha, the Jamboree this year. I know we're going through a little bit of a slowdown in the hobby. I think this is just a very typical thing that we're used to experiencing when, you know, we're in the hobby for a long, long time. We see these cycles, ups and downs and so forth. But I think things are getting a little bit better now, gaining a little bit more momentum. We've seen a little bit of an improvement in the last year, I guess you could say. And so let's start with first things first. I know a lot of the listeners know about IRCHA. They know about the Jamboree. A lot of people think of IRCHA as the Jamboree, but IRCHA goes above and beyond the Jamboree. IRCHA is an organization that it's 100% dedicated about the helicopter side of our hobby. Tim or Wes, whomever wants to answer, tell us when IRCHA was started and what do you, if you guys know or can share as to why IRCHA was founded or started, what was the mission at the time?
I can probably answer this one because I was, I'm going to show my age here. I was pre when IRCHA was around. It was the early 1990s, and a gentleman named Don Chapman, he was an Ohio native, and his desire was to expand helicopter flying and the talents in the United States and the world, actually. It's an international thing, and it really kind of started with the precision competition that was really the foundation of model helicopter technology back in the day. And it's evolved. It's evolved greatly over the years. The first Jamboree, I think, was 1991, because I think I went to the third one in 1993, and I was in Pennsylvania at a little field, and there was probably 25 of us there, including Curtis Youngblood at that time.
Wow.
So it's been around since about the early 90s. I can't tell you exactly the date when it started.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kyle, you want to ask the question here?
Yeah. So, Tim, you mentioned that it started back in the 90s, but do you remember what it started in Pennsylvania, or it was in Ohio, I heard, at some point? So where did it actually start?
Yeah, well, I mean, at first, Don Chapman was an Ohio native. At first, it was moving around. And I don't remember if it was the second or third one I went to, but it was right outside of West Pennsylvania. We were in West Pennsylvania near the Pittsburgh area. I don't remember the field, but it was a small field in Western Pennsylvania. And then shortly after, I'm going to say 3 to 5 years, it began to have a home in the Columbus area of Ohio. And that home was next to a drag strip right next to an airport, because I flew in there a couple of times with my airplane, and it was really convenient for that. But then it grew so much after that, the international airspace that AMA has was really the final home and is the home right now of the Jamboree. So it moved, it was in central Ohio, and then it's moved to Indiana for certainly the last 10 to 12 years.
Nice. And how long have you both been involved as part of the IRCHA board, IRCHA committee?
Well, I'm pretty new to the committee, myself, Wes, here, about a year and a half, almost 2 years into being a board member. But my first Jamboree was in 2003 or four. I think it was 2004 was the first Jamboree I attended. So,
nice. What about you, Tim?
Yeah, I've been involved as a board member for a little bit longer than Wes, maybe 4 years, but I sort of behaved as a quiet consultant to some of the guys for several years before that, and then they just kind of pulled me in, and I really couldn't get out of it.
I hear you.
If that makes sense.
I hear you. That's what happens when we volunteer for anything in the hobby,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's true. It's so true.
Yeah. So how do you think how do you think the hobby has changed as viewed from within IRCHA? How has IRCHA and the hobby in itself changed in all these years? Since you're the old timer here, Tim, I'll let you answer that one. Just in brief words.
Sure. I started out where the gods of this hobby were F3C competitors. So if you can loop and roll a helicopter back in my first contest was 1980. So if you can loop and roll a helicopter and be able to bring your model back in less than three pieces, you had a successful flight and you might win the event.
Nice.
So we have seen equipment evolve, of course, and F3C for a great deal of that time I was involved in the hobby really pushed that. Mm-hmm. So we've seen that precision competition of F3C aerobatics become sort of a less popular when it comes to the masses. The masses are into, of course, 3D and freestyle, exciting things. And that really, I'm going to guess, started like 15 years ago. I mean, Curtis Youngblood was our first, well, actually before that, Mike Moss was sort of the guy who was doing the backward inverted stuff that was switchless, and then Curtis evolved it. And then we've had different people sort of step it up. And it's been cyclical. I know that from your perspective, from the BK side, your perspective is the hobby has sort of went up and down a little bit. If you look at it from 15 years ago, this hobby is significantly bigger than it was back then. It went through a really nice peak for a while, and it's declined a little bit. I think it's flattening out right now. So I think we're probably headed for a bump in growth like we saw like back in the 2010 area, but I think we're going to see a little bit of a nice strong growth, maybe with some more loyal long-term people.
Yeah, well, I've seen. Yeah, what I meant to say with the cycle is that it does. I've been in the hobby since 1983, so long enough. Right. I haven't been in helicopters for that long,
sure.
But I've seen it go up and down. But sure enough, every time it goes down, it's bigger than it was on the previous downside. You know what I mean? Like it's growing.
Yes.
Yep.
So even though there's a cycle of up and down, at the low. Peak, I guess you could say, at the low end of low cycle, it's always still bigger than the low end of the previous cycle. So it keeps growing. There's no question. And now it's on the upswing, exactly, of that cycle. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I remember the first cycle that I saw was when the Synergy brand started with Jason and Todd, and when they left Miniature Aircraft to go do their own thing, it was like the world was going to come to an end, it seemed like, in the hobby. And, you know, I really didn't think there would be much of a helicopter hobby after that. The N9 didn't take off great right away. And so I expected that's it. The hobby's going to fizzle, you know, and then it, you know, kept building back up momentum and building back momentum. And we turned into a completely other side swing that was one of the biggest ones we've ever seen in the hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So, and that was about 2004, I would say, when
yep, Jason. That was in 2004.
Yeah.
Times certainly have changed. But in your guys' opinion, and Tim, since you've been around since it started, what year was the biggest year for IRCHA, and how many pilots were there?
For the Jamboree.
Yeah, the Jamboree.
I'm going to guess, I think 2009 was a really big year. And I'm thinking, and one of the reasons it was a big year is we piggybacked the IRCHA Jamboree on the World Championship that we had here. So we had a lot of international people. We probably had 100 more international people that would not normally come. Mm-hmm. So that was a big explosive event in 2009. And then I guess somewhere around 2013 was probably, or 14. I don't know the numbers because I wasn't privy to numbers at that time. But my understanding is that 2013, 2014, we had right at about 1,000 registered pilots. That was what I was told.
Wow. 1,000. And has it changed a lot since then?
Well, I mean, I think it has. We vendors have died. And we don't see some of them anymore.
Well, that's a little bit of a I don't think they've died, but certainly they're not like they used to be then, of course, no doubt. Yeah.
Well, right. Well, there are vendors in this business that are no longer vendors in this business.
I'm not talking
about large ones. I'm talking about smaller vendors. And we used to have a very large tent that we would have single or smaller vendors. And we used to have that filled with 20 smaller vendors that wanted to sell, you know, field boxes and table stands and you know, special cool tools. Those aren't around anymore. So there's a lot of people or a lot of companies that were kind of start up when it was going crazy that are no longer there. So we don't see that anymore, or we don't see that level anymore. And the pilots that were coming, we don't see as many right now. And again, we're talking about a number of years that we've gone from 1,000 to let's say 500-600 in the last couple of years. So it has declined as far as the numbers of pilots, But my understanding from people that we respect in the hobby, we are tracking the popularity as far as people per sales. We're tracking it very well, the way the economy for the model helicopters are going, almost directly. So I'm not uncomfortable with the fact that we have lower turnout, because the market has gone, let's say we've gone down by 20%. Well, the market has gone down by 20%, and we sort of think that that's at least tracking the market. We're not happy about it, but we're not really scared about it either.
Yeah. So what does it take? What kind of crew does it take to put on a jamboree? How many people do you have usually involved volunteering for this, in addition to all of you guys?
Well, there's five.
Go ahead, Wes. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's five of us, and so the five of us kind of work together and each take a different direction, typically, on starting out the planning for the jamboree. And so, Tim has a list of people he works with, talks to, whether it's vendors or whatever, from either perspective, a vendor from a helicopter brand to a vendor for porta potties, because we got to have the porta johns, you know. Yeah. So getting all this stuff coordinated, getting it all put together. And then as we get closer and closer to the event, we start reaching out to some of our tried and true volunteers that have been in the hobby and around for a long time, and they have interests in doing their own little niche things. And so as we go and work with them, and they set up little teams of groups of guys and gals to come out and help us work to do different jobs. So it grows pretty quickly, but we kind of just depend on people to show up. If you build it, and they will come, and so we just keep building it, and volunteers just keep coming out of the woodwork to come help, and we're really grateful that they're willing to come out and do that.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge undertaking. I can definitely see that, no doubt.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And without the volunteers that might be listening, I tell you what, we couldn't do it. There are some people that there is not enough things we can ask before they say, when do you need it by? And I'm just so impressed by some of the people who are willing to just give up their time, and I'm thankful for it too.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. So what was your guys' collective impression of the Jamboree in 2018? Did it kind of go as you expected it to? Did anything change last minute? Like, what are your thoughts?
I'll let you answer first, Wes, because I have my own thoughts. Maybe it might be the same.
Yeah, you know, we made quite a few changes to 2018 that, at least initially on social media, were not entirely popular. So we dealt with the wrath of that. And then, there were other changes that people didn't expect and were positively surprised when they got to the event. We had all the lights set up and everything like we have had the year before, and we did some night fly competition stuff, and as you participated in, Bert, you guys did a great job of kind of helping us out and grabbing the mic and helping us grow some of the nighttime activities that have maybe been a little staler in the past than they were this year. So this year all that stuff was pretty hot, and that was great to get to see for all of us. But, it's just it's a constant evolution. And so we're always trying to work hard to come up with what we can do to evolve the event. And, we come up with a ton of great ideas. And then all of a sudden we get this great idea. Well, we can't do that because of this.
Yeah.
We can't do that this other idea because of that. And
yeah,
so,
it's always difficult. I can see that, no doubt.
Yeah, we get a lot of great ideas that get inhibited by just what at the time seemed like small, petty problems, but it's just cans of worms that we're not willing to open, or liability that we're not really willing to take. I mean, we're inviting say 1,000 people to Muncie to come to this event, and we're kind of responsible for making sure that everyone has a good time, that no one gets hurt, that all these things. And so with our the vendors, as far as the food people go, the people that are just coming to work the event, and all those people that it takes to put this together, we got to look out for them too. So
yeah, of course. What about you, Tim? What do you think?
Yeah, and I'll echo a lot of what Wes says. But for those of you who don't know me, my day job is not model helicopters. I make a living at owning a couple of businesses, and sales and marketing in an engineering way is how I've made a living for the last 30 years. And what I do, and I have done the last couple of years, is I've taken my golf cart, I've gone left and right of Stage Center past the cheap seats, and I wanted to talk to just the people who are there hanging out, trying to have a good time with their friends. And I asked them, you know, what do you all think about this? I mean, is this something about positive and a negative? And I tell you, this year, believe it or not, I got more positive responses from people that I know have complained in the past about, hey, you know, it was a little bit this or a little bit that. This year, I've got the impression from the regular guys, the guys that are not sponsored, the guys that are just there to enjoy themselves, a little fellowship, that they had a great time, got a chance to see some just outstanding demo pilots, and just had a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I even got that sense. You know, I was there without a booth for the first time in many years. Without a formal quote-unquote booth. We still sponsor the event, and we try to help in whatever way
we
could.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. It's part of our passion, right? But what I did notice is I did get a lot of feedback from people that it felt more enjoyable and more laid back. And I think a lot of the stuff you guys did with let's face it, they were pretty corny contest, but you know, Charles's idea, you know, Charles is the president, for those of you who don't know, but still, man, it brings a level of just fun that had not been there in previous years. The organized night event on Saturday night, the historically well organized event Saturday night, has always been fun, but this year, even though it wasn't the same high budget type production, I think people had as much fun, if not more, because they were just enjoying themselves and it wasn't as structured, right? So I think everybody had a lot of fun. It was one of the best years that I can remember, at least for me. So
they did, Bert. It's interesting that you say that. I asked people directly, did you miss the fireworks show? And they said, no, this is a whole lot more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fun. It was laughs. It was cheering. It was just a fun event. It felt like an old style fun event. And I will take Charles from underneath the bus. I am the one who came up with the
okay.
triathlon. I was hoping to use the defibrillator we had in the camper, but I couldn't get anybody to go under, you know?
Oh boy. Oh boy. Well, it was definitely a lot of fun. It was definitely a lot of fun. It's the little details like that are very, very difficult sometimes to pull off, because when you're organizing an event, you're not thinking about that. You're more worried about, like Wes said, you're worried about people's safety. You're worried about the food being there. You're worried about enough porta potties. You're worried about the tent people doing their job. The sound system working. You're worried about all these logistical things, you know, all these logistics, and it's not that you don't care about the fun part, but that's your main responsibility, is to make the event happen. So I feel like there's that part needs to come from volunteers that kind of spice it up, right? Because you guys have enough on your plate.
I agree.
Yeah. So I hear that there's something special going on. What's going on?
Wes, you want to start it?
Sure. So this year we are going to do things a little different than we have in the past. And so we're going to start out this year with a little bit of competition. So in past years, we have all the normal events that happen at the event. But we're going to start with a new event called the IRCHA World Helicopter IRCHA Model Helicopter World Championship. And so we're going to go and create a world-level competition that's unlike what we've seen in the past. And so we're going to take it to a next level in how we're going to judge it and how we're going to get through this. So we're really excited about having a competition that's going to hopefully bring back some excitement, maybe for the competition scene, and get people excited about coming out to just enjoy the event.
Nice. And when is this? You said in the beginning. So is this going to be early in the during the Jamboree days, or?
Well, it's going to consist throughout the Jamboree. So there's going to be three separate flights, and so the first flight is going to be a part of the NATS. So we're going to use pilot's score from the F3N competition to bring it in to be one of the three scores of the total world champion competition. So
I hear you. So what about those pilots that cannot attend the Nats, but they still want to participate? How do you handle that?
Yeah, so we're going to have three different areas that we're going to be doing the competition from. So the first one's going to be the F3N side of the competition. The next side is going to be like a SMAC music flight is what we're kind of trying to start off calling it. So just an entertaining flight to music. And so that's going to be the second flight. And then the third flight is going to be a traditional night flight. And so we're going to bring down each one of these three event sets. And then after you've participated in all three, whichever one is the lowest score, we'll drop your lowest score. So if, let's say, you can't make it to the Nats or something for the F3N portion, you're not completely out of the competition. That will just be your drop.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
Interesting.
So
let me take a little back. I want to just give a little backward on this, Bert, just so we understand. We really kind of have been thinking about doing a North American contest for a number of years. We don't have any really in North America other than the XFC, and XFC does a really good job, but we feel that these are two different events, what Frank is doing with XFC and what we're doing with the World Helicopter Championship are two different events. We're not taking anything away from Frank, but we think that our event is very, very special. And we wanted to do this. Bert, you're a full-size pilot, and maybe you do, maybe you don't, but some of the very best demo pilots in full-size aviation are not necessarily the best best precision pilots, and vice versa. So we said, hey, how do we get the very best world-class helicopter pilot and produce a champion? And I'll tell you what, Kyle, you're one I thought about because you're an artist when it comes to your demo flying. I have seen you put together some things that are intriguing, unique, different, exciting. And I say, okay, well, that pilot does not have a venue for a world championship. Their ability to put things together in such a way that you say, wow, there's artistry and there's performance and there's precision. I look at a guy like, and I'm not taking anything away from Kyle, but I look at a guy like Bobby Watts, who's put together some very creative night stuff. He's put together not only a decent flying routine, but he's put together technology that shows artistry and science combined. So we wanted to put those two events, and they wanted to add them to a Precision F3N, which is a world championship, a world-known event. And we wanted to put those three events together and say, whoever wins this is the world champion of helicopters.
Interesting.
Sounds interesting. Sounds really interesting. Huh. So do you have the dates for the Nationals this year when F3N will take place?
What is that, Wes? It starts the Saturday before we start IRCHA. I forgot.
Yep. Okay. Saturday before IRCHA starts is going to be when the Nats is going to start. And so I believe Saturday is going to be when we have our pilots meeting. And so I believe that would leave first flights to starting after that. Is that correct, Tim?
We'll start right after that. Yep, on Sunday.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're only going to have a percentage of those people who not only want to fly in the Nats, but also want to participate in the World Championship. Only a percentage of those, probably the top 12 at most, will come over and do their two flights, what I call smack music and then night music, over at the IRCHA Jamboree site, mixed in with the festivities there.
So is each flight weighed the same as far as score goes? Because I can tell you right now that if I compete in this, I'm going to have to miss the F3N part. Because that Saturday for the Nationals is the same weekend as XFC.
Yep. Right, and exactly, they are. And we did that specifically. Here's a couple things, Kyle. My intention, and I'm having a little bit of a dispute with my colleagues at IRCHA, my intention was to do this every other year, starting next year. My esteemed colleague from Chattanooga insisted that we try it this year and at least get our feet wet. And I said, well, we have to make it for a couple of reasons. We have to make it so that if somebody can come only for the Jamboree, let's say come on Wednesday, let's say you're coming from Japan or somewhere, anywhere in Asia or the UK or, you know, Germany, well, you might not be able to get there for the whole F3N in the future. So, Kyle, if you were able to get 2,000 points in night and in the smack down music, that puts you at the number one spot.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And, 2,000 will win, or the best score. So you don't have to be at 3 and all.
So you're basically dropping one out of the three. So. So
exactly.
If you still perform well on the last two events, on the last two flights, then you still have a really good shot at winning this thing.
You do. We believe, and now this year I'd like to call it more of a preliminary year. We will crown a world champion this year, but in the future, we would think that most serious pilots would not want to miss, and we won't have a problem with XFC the next time we do this. We want to have this where you want to do F3N, but certainly this year and possibly next year you'll be able to do it F3N. But Kyle, again, 2,000 points wins the world championship.
Nice. So in years past at the main competition at IRCHA, which will remain unnamed for reasons, but I've been able to use some pretty fancy enhancements, I guess, launching it out of a box and a parachute and stuff. So is that fair game here, or is it just a traditional flight for the SMAC routine?
Well, yeah, the SMAC routine during the day is designed for not having enhancements. Now we're not saying you can't have enhancements, but if you remember, there was at that time we were offering more time where people use nitro machines and electric helicopters. We're having a set amount of time, so I don't think that we'll be having that style of enhancement at this point in the SMAC routine.
Okay.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Right.
Because it
now,
it,
at night.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
And I was going to say at night, now we're heavily weighing at night the artistic part of it. So, you know, just throwing on some glow sticks and being able to smack the thing off the ground and avoiding a crash is not going to be good enough. It's going to be somebody who is putting music with light in such a way that is a performance, an art. And I, Kyle, again, I've seen you do that in both aspects of the sport, and I really kind of used you as my thinking of this.
So Tim and Wes, a slight detour from this, because this brings me into a question that I meant to ask you during this conversation. We had an interview last week with a fellow modeler from the UK that's designing some pretty interesting, cool lighting kit for blades. Is that against the IRCHA rules in general to install lights on your own blades?
It's not. You know, we had some questions about that this year, and so it's not. We had some publications put out that said that you were not allowed to create your own night blades, and that was not really our doing. That was a little more towards AMA's idea, and that I believe has been redacted. And so now you are still able to do that, but the spotlight flying is still not an approved style of flying. So
spotlight is not, but lights it is, like construction lights.
Yeah.
And I was really excited. I can't tell you that when I heard last week's podcast, I listened to your podcast last week, and I heard about the light kits. I'm like, wow, that's just a perfect intro into what we're trying to get at here, is something new, creative, and a great way to go and launch into a new platform.
Yeah, and I started to think about this, and I just don't see any reason as to why AMA or IRCHA or anybody, any other organization for that matter, would prohibit or not endorse or not, I wouldn't say endorse, but not allow or condemn the use of this, because this is going to be a product that is going to be it's a out of the box product that is made specially for this purpose, that has been tested and gone through R&D and so forth. I mean, obviously the manufacturer is going to have its own share of liability like any of us, but when it comes to the fact this is not a homemade product that somebody went to the hardware store and scavenged for parts to put this together. This will be an out-of-the-box product that's specially made for this purpose. So I think it'll be really cool, because it'll also allow people to program their blade colors and everything else, and also even use different size helicopters. So maybe not for the purposes of the IRCHA competition, but for any other purpose. So and of course, for the purposes of the IRCHA competition, this could also enhance the pilot's ability to render a better display, a better show, a more artistic show, like you said, Tim.
Absolutely. It sounds like there's a perfect dovetail in for this technology and this event.
Yeah. We've talked with some other people about it, and that's one of the questions we'd had was, you know, well, what about if somebody can come out with something like, say, the Magic Blades or something like that, where you can put actual images up on the blade and all that? Well, those blades are fantastic, but, you know, they're not the most, nicely, but they're not the toughest of blade to hold up to an aggressive style flight. I think that something like your guys' switches with this light kit on it, or even the current night blades you guys make, would be a great way to do something with this kind of or style of competition.
Sure.
So the IRCHA Helicopter World Championships, is that the name? Is that the name?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. Hmm. It is going to be. We are going to crown the world. We believe that the person who is able to achieve the best score in these three events out of all three is really the world champion. Now, that may be people may disagree with that, but in the future. But I think to master these three styles of flying, or a little bit of the best of each one of them, I think will produce a world champion.
Nice. Very cool. Well,
One of the other things we'd like to maybe touch on real quick that's always been a point of contention in our contests are the judging. And so we're going to be using seated judges for the competition. So our plan is to come up with a honest, fair way to judge this rather than a crowd style of judging.
So definitely.
That's very good. That's very good to hear.
There's no crowd involvement at all, except they're going to be applauding you when you land, but that will have nothing to do with the way the judges score.
So let's go back a little bit before we wrap this up and talk a little bit about, Wes, you made a comment earlier in the conversation about the fact that you guys have received some criticism via social media and so forth. Yeah. I'd like to address it because I think I have personally, every time I've been out on the podcast or whatever, or met new pilots, I've always told those pilots, you have got to make the trip to the IRCHA Jamboree, even if it's the one time, because, you know, obviously, there's certain restraint, like some people might not be able to afford it, or they live too far away, or they have family or other commitments. But if they can't make the trip, I've always told people, make the trip. And you're always going to have some kind of criticism from different places because, hey, we're in the RC helicopter business here. We can't make everybody happy. It's technically impossible. But is there any points that you would like to address that where you feel that people criticized the event that should be worth mentioning and kind of like explain or give your side of the story?
You know, the only thing that, I feel like we're currently maybe not fully, isn't fully out there is maybe the date change that we've had to do for the Jamboree. You know, I know a lot of people were not real pleased with our requirement to change it, but I promise this was not at all our idea to go down this path. But we fought really hard to keep the date that we had, and we come to the same problem we talked about earlier, was that, you know, we can't make everybody happy, but we still need to go and be able to make something work. And so every time we would come up with a solution, well, what if we move the event, or what if we do this or do that? We just kept running into more and more roadblocks. And so this seemed to be the best course of action that we could take. So.
Well, and you guys are at the mercy of what AMA wants to do with you. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Correct.
So you have to work with the dates within the constraints of the AMA. There's always going to be people criticizing things. I mean, some people criticize, for example, the registration fee. Well, I think you can get away with charging more if you needed to. I mean, honestly, like, people are always going to complain about something, and I call it as it is. I'll give you a very quick, make a long story very short. I was not involved with the Orlando event last year, but I was kind of helping those guys, and Bobby and Gator were trying to figure out how much to charge for registration, and they settled it at $45. And so I feel like $45 was more than fair for your average Friday, Saturday, Sunday event with a free T-shirt. But So how much is historically Urcha been? Like, how much was Urcha last year? Was it 75, 85? I can't remember.
You're going to get me lying because we've been talking about this so much already. That
No, but how much was it? How much was it last year, though?
70, I really can't remember. We've talked about
it. I don't either.
I think it's 70, but what it's going to be. But what I was getting at, I thought it was 75 or even 80.
Yeah, it might be.
And what I was thinking is, when you pay $80 for 5 days of flying in a beautiful, huge, a huge site, you get a free T-shirt and a catered dinner, right? And the dinner is typically catered by a good place. Like, wasn't it Outback last year? I forgot.
Texas Roadhouse.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that works out to be what, $15 a day, and it gives you one good dinner and it gives you one T-shirt. I don't think that's unreasonable. I really don't.
Yeah.
Right.
I think $100 would still be reasonable. I mean, people are going to complain. Listen, some of these people show up at Urcha with $10,000 worth of freaking toy helicopters. You're going to tell me they cannot afford $100. Please.
Yeah.
You know?
Bert, that's interesting you mentioned that. There was a fellow, I'm not going to mention his name, last year. He comes over there with an $8,000 speed machine, and he started complaining that Santiago wanted $50 for him to run his machine. I said, you have an $8,000 helicopter. This is one of the few places you can actually compete, and you're complaining about $50.
So, well, it happens to us. It happens to us in the club. You know, club membership is $100 a year. People don't want to pay $100, but they have a fleet, you know? And each helicopter.
It's a beautiful field you have there. Beautiful field you have there.
Thank you. But, it's you know, we're always going to have. The bottom line is, Urcha Jamboree has sentimental value to all of us helicopter pilots, okay? And for a lot of different reasons. It's the only event that has survived. The Jamboree is the only event that has survived, what, almost 30 years now, right?
Yeah.
I think you said early 90s. We're almost, you know, in 2020. Not quite. But almost 30 years. And historically, it's been the event that has had the most attendance, including the best pilots from all over the world, and just for that reason alone, it's worth supporting. So for the listeners listening out there, if you guys have not been, or you've been told not to go, or whatever, whomever told you that is wrong. You have got to give it a shot. And make the trip, and if you can't afford it, of course, and if you don't like it, which I doubt, then that's your own call to make. But it's worth attending, at least, to check it out, and you'll have plenty of fun either way, no question.
There's so many things to it that are just so unique to each individual person. Whether it's, you know, somebody wants to go fly center stage, you get out there at 9 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody at center stage. It's all yours to go enjoy, you know. So if you get out there early, there's plenty of time to go do all the flying you could ever want to go and do. You know, we have some times during the day where we, you know, have some festivities that go on, but you know, it's just, there's the night scene like you guys enjoy. There's so many things that,
oh, and the, you know, the site itself is huge. I mean, you're always going to find a fly station to fly at, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And it's the only place, I believe, in the world where everything is there in one spot. I don't do scale, but I'm fascinated when I go over to the scale tent and I see these pieces of art that are just incredible. And there's a large group of people that do that. And then the speed stuff, again, I know, Bert, you've done it a few times. It seems like it's going way faster than I want to go, but it seems very cool. And you just can't find this entire grouping anywhere else in the world like this.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Absolutely.
And also, you know, for the people listening, if you do go to Urcha and you don't want to bring a helicopter, it's not easy. You know, you're flying and you've never flown with your helis before. Show up there without your helicopter and go to the booth and talk to these guys and pay the registration whether you fly or not. It's supporting an event that is very difficult to run, that costs a lot of money to make happen. So, and it'll be worth your while because, like Tim said, you can check out the scale section. You can check out the speed area. Watch the guys fly the speed stuff. Of course, not to mention all the vendors that show up with product to sell or product to display. And, I mean, you can pretty much go to Urcha with any question you may have and have that question answered by an unlimited number of extremely knowledgeable people. And of course, watch the top pilots from all over the world and enjoy the night festivities and everything else. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer.
Yep. Okay. I totally agree. Thank you. Yep.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it.
And we appreciate you, Bert. Yeah. I want to mention, if you want prior to Urcha, you want to kind of get a 60-day countdown and kind of know what we're sort of planning, and we're more than welcome you to do that. And I also wanted to invite you in the event, and I know you did it last year a little bit, is if you want to stream some of this this World Championship, it's certainly more of the Urcha side of it where we're going to do it on that side. We've really allowed and invited anybody that we're talking with on other podcasts. If you want to combine your talents or your capabilities and do it, we want to make people that say couldn't get to Urcha, they're in somewhere in Europe and just couldn't afford it. We want them to see some of this stuff, and we'd welcome you to do it if that's something you want to do.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much for the offer.
Very cool.
We'll definitely be in touch multiple times between now and then. So yeah, I have no doubt about that. And
I have another shameless plug for our organization. We have some more coolness coming out soon. I'm just gonna say it that way. You guys aren't gonna find out what it is until we're ready to get it completely launched. But
well, you can't do that.
There's going to be some more change to how things are going from my job as the secretary. I'll give a little hint from my job as the secretary for 2019. So, yeah.
Nice. Hmm. Well, and it's good. And I'm sure the modelers out there are appreciative of the fact that you guys are looking out for them and trying to bring something new to the event, make the event even more interesting to them and more appealing to them. So that's always good to know. That's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys once again. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Colin, Bert. We really appreciate your time. We know it's important to talk about this. We know you have other things, and we really appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, you're very welcome. So if somebody has a question for either one of you or for Urcha in general, for the Urcha committee, where should they address that? Should they go on Facebook, or what's the easiest way?
You can come on Facebook. You can send us a Facebook Messenger. I have it linked directly to my Facebook account. If you're more of an email person, wes.minear@urcha.org. That's definitely a great way to reach me. I get all the emails for that as well. So if you have a question about the organization or about the contest or anything, just feel free to shoot me an email.
Perfect. Cool. Now it's my job to convince Kyle Stacey to sign up.
Yes.
Awesome. All right, guys.
We're looking forward to seeing you, buddy.
Sounds good to me.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Once again, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
All right. You too.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
So what do you think?
That's pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. I like the new competition idea. That's pretty awesome.
Are you going to compete?
Absolutely.
Are you going to do Battle of the Brands? Are you going to do XFC?
That's a plateful. That's a plateful right there. I better start now and hope for the best.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. The new competition sounds cool.
You have to pick one.
Between Battle of the Brands and the new Urcha World Class?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's not reasonable to try to do both. It makes no sense. Like, from a preparation perspective, it makes no sense.
It's going to be a lot. Even back in the day when all I did all day was fly, I think it still would have been a handful. And now that I kind of have a job and some responsibilities to take care of, I just don't know if I'll be able to squeeze all three.
Yeah, but it's hard.
We'll see what we can do, though. I'm looking forward to the new one. I think mixing up night flying and day smack is going to be cool. Unfortunately, I can tell you right now, I'm not going to make it to the F3N1 due to XFC.
Yeah, XFC is the same weekend. Yeah. So what was your first, your best Urcha experience?
My best Urcha experience was probably 2014 when I won my first major competition, which would have been the one competition. That's when we used the...
That was your best experience?
Yeah. Because it was like the biggest one for me as far as like attendance, and then just being able to win a competition of that size was, you know, life-changing at the time.
So. What do you mean the first one as far as attendance? What?
That was like one of the biggest ones that I can remember.
Oh, the big, yeah.
Because I was so young when it was so big that I don't.
I think 2009 or 10 were the bigger ones. I think I can't remember now. It's all a blur. They're all
They all blend together. They all
blend in together.
Yeah. What about you?
My best one was 2006.
2006?
That's the year I met my wife.
There you go. Yeah. Good answer. Yeah. Good answer.
It was really the best, though. It was the most fun. Yeah. I was newer to the helicopter side, so I was like, even though I was sponsored then already, I was kind of mesmerized by like hanging with all these other guys and like, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. Good times.
Nice.
Good times. And it was a little bit more intimate. It was smaller. It was still big, but it was it was a little more intimate. You had more time to chill and hang with other people. Now it's busy. Like, you can make your own time, but like, it's busy.
I can't remember what year it was. I want to say it was 2011. But how it worked is if you guys have never been to IRCHA, there's something called a power hour, and that's when a vendor gets one full hour to do demos. And I remember that I was sponsored by the string of companies that demoed from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m., and all I did all day long was demos. I would run to the motorhome, change shirt, go back out and do demos. Like from 11 to 6, that's all I did.
Yeah, I remember doing a lot of that myself. It was crazy.
Very tiring.
It was like do a demo for, I don't know.
Byron Fuels.
Do a demo for Scorpion. Do a demo for, it was nonstop.
It was just tiring. So 17 was, or what was it, 18 now was pretty cool. It was just more laid back and hanging out with the customers and talking to people.
I still felt it was busy, though. It was like nonstop. Like, the days were flying.
Yeah.
We were going really fast.
Yeah, so. It's just a different nonstop.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm looking forward to 2019 Jamboree. I think it'll be fun.
So what do you think 2019? Excuse me. What do you think? What do you anticipate for 2019?
I'm anticipating a smoother running, more populated and busy 2018 version of IRCHA.
2018 version.
Busier. For 2019. So I think it's going to be very similar. I think it's going to be kind of laid back and the same, but you know, I think you and I personally will be more busy. I think
those guys have had a lot of blowback over dumb stuff, you know, like on social media and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think it's unfair because at the end of the day, they're all volunteers. So they're trying to do something just for the love of the hobby.
Yeah. This is not their income. They don't make money off it.
No. So. Everybody has to give the event a chance and check it out.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Cool.
Well,
let's get this thing going here.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Coat race time.
Time to do it.
Okay. So the first coat.
Yep.
This is good for... This is too much, man. You sure you want to do this?
Yeah, we should do it.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's good though.
All right.
You want me to do it?
Yeah. So what is it?
It's $50 gift certificate for purchases of $250 or more. Just to clarify, that's not $50 off $250. That's $50 gift certificate from your $250 order.
So basically you order something or a combination of thereof items worth $250 or more.
Yeah.
You enter this code, you'll get a message that says, yes, code is good.
Yeah.
If it's good, if you're the first one to use it, right?
Right.
And and then you'll get a $50 gift certificate.
Right.
So you can get $50 worth of free stuff. So that works out to be a lot.
Yeah.
That's almost like 20%, I think.
Yeah.
Plus, you still get your rewards.
Right.
So, all right, go for it.
So, the code, BKRC856RTF.
Yeah.
BKRC856 Romeo Tango Foxtrot.
Or Ready to Fly. and the second code is BKRC632WED. Again, BKRC632 Whiskey Echo Delta. Or Wednesday.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
And you got to use them within 7 days. And we also have another one.
Yes.
If you guys want a Tortuga, we have a Tortuga. We're going to do a lot of Tortugas every week. Why not? Screw it.
Let's do it.
All right. BKRC TOR2. That's BKRC Tango Oscar Romeo 2. And that is for 25% off Tortuga airplane kit.
Wow. That is a deal right there.
Yeah. Either the kit or the kit motor combo. All right. It is a crazy deal.
That is a deal.
Awesome.
Nice.
So, are we good? Is that it?
That's it. We're done? I got nothing else.
All right. We need to think about next week's topic.
Very easy. Yeah. Done. It's already done.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it going to be? No, we're not going to.
We're not going to say it, just in case we change our minds.
Change our minds. All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So you guys can get a hold of us at Facebook/TheBKOfficial or Instagram, TheBKOfficial.
Yep. And I'm available on Facebook.com/KyleStacyRC.
Yep, and I'm at Facebook.com/BertRC, BERTRC. Or Instagram, Bert_Kammer.
Yep.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.